Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
You see this story about Monopoly yesterday. One of America's most recognizable board games is getting an upgrade. Hasbro is debuting a new game celebrating women's empowerment, Ms. Monopoly, marking the first time in Monopoly history. I used to love that game. I haven't played in a while. I should probably try to do that with my daughter now. You know, my kids are older, so I've missed out on some of the board games in the past few years. We've been doing Candyland and things like that, have not shifted to Monopoly. I'm surprised Monopoly is even allowed. You think they'll talk about that on the stage tomorrow night? That is capitalistic and hateful. Monopoly should be banned. Let's ban those with e-cigarettes. In Ms. Monopoly, ladies and gentlemen, or maybe just ladies, female players will get more money. Unlike the classic game, women will collect 240 Monopoly bucks when they pass go, while male players will collect the usual 200. If you're male and white, you only get 150. Wait a second, is that not true? I thought...
You are fake news.
Well, I thought it might work. The idea is to create a game where women make more than men. The first game to do so, according to Hasbro. It's a fun new take on a game that creates a world where women have an advantage, often enjoyed by men, the company said in a statement. But don't worry, if men play their cards right, they can make more money too. Man, they should come to my family where my wife consistently outdoes me in the payroll ranks. Yeah, Dave Klein's like, yeah, you too, right? Man, I live in a different world. I guess. The announcement of Ms. Monopoly comes a few weeks after the company received criticism for Monopoly Socialism, a tongue-in-cheek game that sparked debate for its flippant handling of socialism. Hasbro debuted Monopoly for Millennials in 2018, poking fun at stereotypical millennial trends such as avocado toast and veganism. I do like that. Look, it's an attempt to sell games where they can't sell games. Board games probably hard to market. They're going to have Ms. Monopoly available for pre-order beginning September 2nd. I mean, the whole thing is stupid, but it's going to help them sell, I guess, more games. It's going to take on the gender pay gap with this game. That's what they're going to do. They're going to fix everything, all, you know, the ills of the world. Female players get $1,900 in money compared to $1,500 for each male player. Women get $240 each time they pass go. Men get $200. Wait, seriously? Instead of buying up properties, Ms. Monopoly players collect inventions made by women, like Wi-Fi, invented by Hedy Lamarr in the 1940s. The internet, invented by Al Gore in the 1980s. I might be making that one up. Chocolate chip cookies, created by Ruth Graves Wakefield in the 1930s. The traditional playing pieces like a battleship and a race car have been swapped for new tokens, including an iron. And I'm kidding. Just trying to see if you're paying attention out there. Am I going to get emails for that, Dave? Probably. Hateful emails? Probably. Hey, my touchscreen went away again. Could you hear that buzz? Oh, man, this is happening again. Nope, it's not working. There we go. Took me three times. I was kidding about the iron. The traditional playing pieces like a battleship and race car have been swapped for new tokens, including a notebook and a pen, a jet and a watch. Whatever. Buy Ms. Monopoly. Here is another... real curious story, if you will. So Doug High mentioned this before the news. He's on a regular basis. One of our great contributors from D.C. used to be the spokesperson for the RNC. He tweeted this out yesterday afternoon. I was sitting here doing TIPM, and he said, this is an amazing Trump reelect video. Caught my attention. And this is from Now This News. And there's a young African-American woman named Faluki Tulele, I think, something like that, who's up there. Talking about, you know, how you would walk into a room and say, hey, guys, what's going on? You probably have done it today. Hey, what's up, guys? For the love of God, don't do it.
Guys is a simple term. It could mean boys, or if you're modern, hip, it means people. At first glance, guys seems inviting, friendly, maybe warm, even comedic at times. But it, like many male default terms, should not be normalized as an all-encompassing phrase.
Yes, we don't want things being normalized along these lines. So pay attention, guys, ladies, guys, everybody. What do we have to say? We're going to learn.
Innocent as it may seem. While we may understand the word means no real harm, with a deeper look, you'll understand that we've been ignoring the cognitive impact on women as well as gender nonconforming folks by only explicitly addressing the male identifying individuals present.
So let's pay attention to that real quick there. Listen to this.
As well as gender nonconforming folks.
Gender nonconforming folks. You know who they're talking about, Dave? They're talking about you. I still hear you saying he and she. You don't say they. You're a gender nonconformist.
For decades, we have set a standard of only addressing the men in the room. Of course, we claim it's colloquial, but with our elevated knowledge and inclusive perspective, it just seems lazy, inconsiderate, and a small part of what reinforces the gender hierarchy today.
Yeah, it's a problem, and we got to do something about it.
How is one to feel empowered to speak or assert themselves when upon greeting, they're misgendered or even ignored in language? Can we be surprised that for decades, women often felt uncomfortable asserting their voice when we didn't even take the time to properly acknowledge them?
All right, so she's going to guide us through some of the things that we shouldn't say and that we should say when it comes to men and women here.
These linguistic tendencies were developed and reinforced in eras where women were barely meant to be seen and certainly not heard. Please note, you're not a bad feminist if you're comfortable with using the phrase guys.
All right, thank God. Okay, so they want to make it clear. If you say guys, you're not a bad feminist. Just keep in mind. If you're a white male, you're bad. Okay, let's get that on the table. Doesn't matter what you say, what you might say, you're a white male, bad. If you're a feminist and you say, guys, we're going to leave you leeway here.
There are larger issues that we, the feminists, need to combat. Reproductive rights, rape culture, violence against women, LGBTQ rights, and the general reprogramming of most people's minds when it comes to the valuation of women in society.
I consider women very important. Smarter than men, and my wife makes more money than me, typically, on any given year. So I think I'm doing okay there, right? Like a lot of guys out there, oh, jeez. A lot of people out there, darn it, how can I? A lot of people out there, not guys, people, don't have a problem.
But when you stop valuing the personhood and visibility of individuals, you make it easier to dehumanize them on a macro scale, minimizing his, her, its, their right to respect and equality.
Had no idea. Had no idea that I've been doing this for decades. I'm 54 years old. I had no idea, and I'm so glad that I now know.
I'm not offended, per se, if someone lumps me in with the guys. I'm sure there's really no malintent. In fact, if you and your friends want to freely address each other, by all means. I just want you to know that you're one small step away from making a more conscious effort to dismantle the patriarchy.
I get to these stories, and we've done a fair amount of them, even this year, even this summer, and I shake my head. And there's one small part of this. Here's what's frightening. I think there might be a temptation on the part of a lot of people out there to say, well, this stuff doesn't happen. This is just some nut job millennial on some, you know, internet site, and she's not really serious. Well, they're serious. Colleges and universities are serious. I had several parents who went to orientation with their freshman kids, whether at KU or elsewhere. We talked about it a few weeks ago, and they have the gender pronoun list right out there. My wife was with some relatives in northern Wisconsin last fall. I told this story on the air, and her cousin had a wife that she had never met. So her cousin had been divorced, and she had not met the new wife, hadn't seen her cousin for a while, and their daughter, who was very similar in age to my daughter. So this was a woman, by the way, that didn't lift a hand at this family party, I was told, too. But there was a point where my wife was trying to keep the kids occupied when this woman wasn't doing anything. And she comes out there playing. She goes, hey, guys, you know, what's going on? And this woman actually stops my wife and says, we're trying not to say guys. Be careful about that. Hey, how about you pay attention to your own kids and not have my wife be the mother of your daughter, too? I think you got bigger issues, woman.
Don't believe me? Try walking into a room full of cisgender heterosexual men and triumphantly announce, hey, gals. Okay, girls.
You know, I actually do this with my friends. I think most guys do that. Now, maybe not along the lines that she's talking about, but you walk in, there's probably something wrong with this, too, and there must be, this would be offensive if you would walk into a bunch of guys and say, hey, ladies, what's going on? Jane Duker does it every Friday. She calls, she goes, hey, ladies, right? It's a joke. It's just a joke. It's not that big of a deal.
Thanks, sis. I'm sure within 10 minutes, if not seconds, at least one person will correct you. We should all be as protective of our gender identities as a cisgender heterosexual man.
That's me. And that's you, Dave. You are a cisgender heterosexual man. Don't forget it.
We deserve it. So what can you do? Substitute one hey guys with a simple good morning, everyone.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it tomorrow.
Hi, y'all. Folks, everybody, scholars, team if you're at work.
Yes.
Campers if you're in the forest.
Of course.
Bay Hive, because it's always appropriate.
I don't know that.
You can also just find ways to insert people's names and address everyone present. And when in doubt, say nothing at all.
Well, that's not going to happen, the say nothing at all part. But I hope that I've done my small part to break down the division of genders and do my part as a they. Do my part as a they to break down some of these barriers in gender in 2019. I still think, man, I hope Elizabeth Warren, I hope Cory Booker, They all believe this, by the way. And if they don't believe it, they're too chicken poop to say it because they think that that's a large part of their constituency that is all worked up about this. The bad news for the girl that did that video and for most people who think this is important, all you crazy lefties out there, is most normal people, even the people that might be on your side politically, they think you're crazy. You know why they think you're crazy? Because you are.
Miss any part of the Mark Reardon Show? Download the podcast anytime.
Initiating download. Stand by.
At KMOX.com/Reardon.
Andy Puzder, one of our go-to guys on the economy. He's with me this afternoon. He was chief executive officer of CKA Restaurants, which is Hardee's and Carl's Jr. for 16 years. Nominated by the president to serve as labor secretary in that kind of went in a different direction, and he wrote about the August jobs report and some of the things happening in this economy. Wanted to get him back on. Andy, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I always ask this question because you got the St. Louis connection. Have you been here to St. Louis this summer?
No, I don't go to St. Louis much in the summer. It's not really the season.
Yeah.
I'm there more in the fall and the winter when my kids are back in school. I've got one son still at Washington University, so I get back there for that.
You know, we actually have the stretch this week is just miserable here. We had a not too bad of an August, but we got these July-like temperatures here in September, which is not too welcome. All right, let's talk about the economy here, because when I read the New York Times and the Washington Post and our St. Louis Post-Dispatch, when I see the coverage on CNN, this is the worst economy that we've had in 50 years. We're heading toward recession, probably any day now. I mean, it's panic in the streets, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. I actually write a lot now out of frustration. People have said, Andy, I'm seeing a lot more stuff you write. Well, it's frustrating because there's so much intentional misrepresentation of what the numbers show. More people are working than have ever worked in the history of the country. There are fewer people unemployed. I mean, the raw number of people unemployed, not forget the unemployment rate, just the number of people unemployed. It's as low as it's been since 2001. And back then, there were 20 million fewer people in the workforce. So we've got very few people unemployed, which is why the unemployment rate's at 3.7%. It hasn't gone up in 4 months. I mean, it's tremendous. If you look at hourly wage growth, we just had our 13th month of 3% plus wage growth. Now, that's important because now we're actually rolling over 3% growth from last year. So this year we had 3.2% growth year over year in August. Last year we had 3.2% year over year growth in 2018. So if you're a worker, if you're out there working, you've seen $3,000, $3,500 a month increasing your salary just because wages are going up. The Heritage Foundation estimates that the average American has saved about $1,400 a year in taxes. You know, you're talking real money. And that's why you saw yesterday from the Census Bureau, we've got the poverty rate down to the lowest it's been, I think, since 2001. It's 11.8%. It's down 0.5% from last year. The income increases we're seeing are in they divide it up into five quartiles. So the bottom 20%, then 20 to 40, then 40 to 60, 60 to 80, and 80 to 100. And the increase in incomes reducing income inequality has come in the 20 to 40%, you know, which is working class Americans. So the economy is doing extremely well. There's even a and you can all check this out. It's the St. Louis Fed publishes something called a recession's probability analysis. Well, if it's under 20%, it's very unlikely that there will be a recession. The new number came out, I think it was September 3rd, and it was 1.5%. So, I mean, the probability of a recession in reality is very, very low. If you're reading about recession, you might think about trying to read something else because you're just being deceived.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. You mentioned the St. Louis Fed. I didn't even hear that report. I'm here in St. Louis. But, you know, the thing that frustrates me, and you and I have talked about this over the years, if you go back to the Obama administration, even in the last couple of years before 2016, 2014 in particular, there were some really, really bad economic numbers. And we at one point, I can't remember what quarter, dipped below. It was in negative territory. But, you know, there wasn't this breathless coverage on CNN. There weren't these front page stories. And you'd get this terrible economic news and it would be buried in the Post-Dispatch on the back pages. Now, I understand, and I think that most people understand, that the economy is cyclical and there are some things out there that might not be as good as we would want them. But good Lord, you'd think that we're in a depression right now.
Well, you know, one thing to think about, and I think it's good to keep in mind two things. One thing is, it's good to keep in mind that every quarter, no matter what, there will be some economic metric that isn't as positive as you'd like it to be. Maybe it's even negative. What you need to do is look at the trends, because things happen in a month or a week or even 2 months that they may not necessarily be consistent with the long-term trend. One trend to keep in mind is that when President Trump took office, we had 2.1 million more people unemployed than we had job openings. A Bureau of Labor Statistics publishes both job openings and the number of people unemployed. And there were 2.1 million more people unemployed on the day that President Trump took office. Today, there are 1.2 million more job openings than there are people unemployed. For the first time in the history of the BLS recording the data, in March of 2018, we actually went to the point where there were more job openings than people unemployed. That number has been, the job openings have been above people unemployed every month since. Never hit it before. It's been up there every month since. And for the past 14 months, we've had more than 7 million job openings out there. So that's a long-term indicator that you can look at and say, are businesses growing? Are they trying to hire people? Are they looking for employees? When you see that kind of number on top of the incredible wage growth that we're seeing, you know the economy's doing just fine. And by the way, consumer spending makes up 68% of our economic growth, 68% of GDP. Through the second quarter of this year, we had the wage growth, consumer spending of 4.7%. That's the highest number since 2014 and the second highest number since 2003. And then consumer spending surged in July. So don't listen to these recession talks. They're just political. They're just people, Democrats, trying to make some point against President Trump. Because if people understand just how amazing the economy is right now, there's no way that any Democrat could beat him.
Andy Puzzer is my guest this afternoon. His most recent book is The Capitalist Comeback, The Trump Boom and the Left's Plot to Stop It. The one thing that makes me nervous, and I've seen some, you know, more conservative pundits, if you will, weigh in on this, is the situation with China. Now, I'm not a trade expert, and I think that I've been assured by you and my friend Dr. Benjamin Akande, who's at WashU now, that this is all part of the negotiation process. Although when I had Dr. Akande on a few weeks ago, he seemed to express a little bit more concern about where this is headed. So you would admit that this is a little risky right now, what the president's doing with China, or not?
Yeah, I'll say two things. One is, it is slowing economic growth. It's slowing their economic growth more than it's slowing ours, but it is slowing our economic growth because businesses are concerned about their supply chains and about what to invest in. But there's a whole big difference between slowing and recession. This economy would be doing 3, 4% right now if it weren't for the fact that we're fighting this war with China and that the Fed took interest rates up too high. Secondly, when do you want to fight this war with China? Do you want to fight it now while we're strong and they're weakening, or do you want to wait until we're weak, till our economy is starting to falter? Now is the time. This is the good fight. We need to fight the good fight. They shouldn't be able to steal our technology. They shouldn't be able to hack into our systems. They shouldn't be able to put American companies out of business by dumping product in the United States. They shouldn't be able to charge incredibly high tariffs on our companies going there when we don't charge those kind of tariffs to their companies coming here. And they shouldn't be able to require that our companies turn over their trade secrets when they do business in China. They do all of that. This is, if this were in the private sector, this would be a criminal enterprise. The Chinese have been cheating us for years. The president's fighting the good fight. It is slowing economic growth. Economic growth would be more dynamic but for the China trade war. But, I ask people who complain about this, I say, well, what's your solution? Do you want to do what President Obama did? Do you want to do what President Bush did? Do you want to do nothing and let him just keep taking advantage of us decade after decade? President Trump said he was going to put a stop to this. He deserves our support. And I actually think I'm actually more optimistic, I think, than most people that we will get a deal with the Chinese. We'll have to see what happens later this month. But we got to fight this now. Now's the time to fight it. And the president needs our support.
So while you're giving me that answer, I just happened to Google something and I just wanted to see where the news was today. And Newsweek has a headline even today about how this China trade situation could plunge us into a deep recession. Here it says, economists at Moody's Analytics estimate in a report that further escalation of President Trump's trade war with China could cost the American economy hundreds of thousands of dollars and plunge it into deep recession. Now, the subplot of that is that they say there's a 35% probability that the trade war will escalate. In other words, there's a 65% chance that this thing's going to get solved.
Well, then that you got to look at the source for this, too. I mean, if this is a... This is kind of a left wing. It's a financial, it's a business oriented organization, but it definitely leans to the left whenever it comes out with anything.
Moody's,
this
you is, mean?
I'm sorry.
Moody's, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like Mark Zandi. He's a good guy, but he's a very left leaning economist who is over there. In any event. We need to fight this now. The odds of a recession are extremely low. There's also another article out this morning about how companies, United States, American companies, are leaving China in groves. And that's the danger to China. Because when companies move their supply chain, when they move production out of China, when they move it to Vietnam, as the garment industry has, or to Thailand, or to any of the southeastern countries with lower labor costs, or to India, That supply chain is never moving back. That's a one-way ticket out. So even though people talk a lot about what's happening with the American consumer and that the Chinese are losing American consumers in this trade war and access to those consumers, that's not the big threat to them. You can get American consumers back if we cut a deal. The big threat is that even if we cut a deal, if they wait too long, a lot of the companies that are manufacturing now in China, including tech companies, are going to be gone. And you're not going to be able to get them back because it's expensive to move. It's time-consuming, and once you do it, you're sure not going to double those expenses by moving back.
Andy Fuzzer, always great to have you here on
great
KMOX.
Great to be here, Mark.
And
thank you.
Yeah, hope you get here to see your son in the fall. We'll talk again soon.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Back in, as I try to yell over my music, I turned on the wrong thing. Sorry, ELO and Jeff Lynn. Back in 2014, and look, we always, celebrate is not the right word, but we always mark this day with a remembrance, and we all remember where we were on 9/11, and unfortunately, and I haven't been around the TV very much, and I still haven't seen. I wonder if they're still. Are they trying to protect us at the network level where they don't show the planes going into the towers, which I think is a mistake, by the way. I haven't seen that image one time today. I only bring it up because I think there was an effort in subsequent years after the attack to not show that as much, but. Mark Rosenker is a guest on this program on a regular basis. He's the CBS News transportation analyst, and he used to be in charge of the NTSB as well. On September 11th, he was with President Bush aboard Air Force One. And in 2014, I did this interview with him.
I was in charge of the White House military office, which was responsible for Air Force One, Marine One, Camp David, the mill aides that carry the football, all of the contingency programs, the undisclosed locations, all of the military support to the president and the vice president of the United States.
So you were there with President Bush at that elementary school in Florida?
Yes, I was with him on the trip for the two-day trip. I would travel with him because of the responsibility of all of the military support that assists the president in his job as commander-in-chief.
So what do you remember from that morning when you find out? And you're with Andy Carr, the White House chief of staff at the time, right?
That is correct. Well, actually, he was in a car in front of me. I was in the motorcade when I first got the call from the presidential Emergency Operations Center. My presidential communications officer turned around to me and said, "Sir, an airplane had just crashed into the World Trade Center tower." And for me, we were 2 minutes out in the motorcade when this occurred. And in it, first perception of this was it had to be a small airplane. It had to be a low ceiling, cloudy, had to be an accident.
Yeah.
And one, that's what I perceived. And two, I was trying to figure out why they were calling us for this. But as we got to the school, I got out. I went over to Andy Carr. I told him that we had gotten a call from the PIOC and that this was an airplane that crashed. Don't know any more about it, but I'll follow up. He said, good. And he went over to the president and mentioned something as well. And at that point, I think the president may have mentioned, wow, what a pilot, because, you know, the president was a pilot. How could you crash into a building like that? Well, I also remember that history, we've seen airplanes crash into the Empire State Building in New York in cloudy conditions, that type of thing, low ceilings. So that's what we all thought right away. The president went in to the holding room, stayed for just a moment, and then went right into the program in the classroom. I went and grabbed one of these audiovisual carts that had a television on it, rolled it in, and plugged it into the power and the cable, and we all that were the traveling party sat around watching it, and of course we were watching the network coverage, saw the hole in the towers. This was live, smoke and fire coming out of it, when all of a sudden we saw the second plane hit the towers, and that's when Andy Card went into the classroom, the famous picture of him leaning over to the president's ear, whispering, "Mr. President, a second plane has hit the World Trade Center. America is under attack."
So after, let's go to the moments after that and what you remember, because obviously you could see the look on the president's face. We were all stunned. I think we all felt the same way when we were watching the video of what had happened after the first plane. People are thinking naturally, well, this has to be some sort of terrible accident. I don't know how it happened. Well, when you see that second plane going, you know for sure that this is an attack. And then, of course, we find out that there's a third and a fourth. So what happens with that team that's assembled in Florida? How do you react?
Well, the first thing I did is I knew at that point we were going to have to leave and get out of there fairly quickly. So I called Air Force One and told the pilot to be ready to leave immediately because this would be about 90 minutes ahead of schedule if in fact we would have remained on schedule. So I knew that this was going to have to change, and I wanted them to be prepared to get ready to go, and as soon as everyone got on the plane, take off. And the president came back into the holding room. He asked me to get hold of the Attorney General and the Director of the FBI on our classified phones. He was taking another phone call on another classified call, and we began the process of trying to understand what had happened. He then did a very brief statement before we left, and then we got back into the motorcade and quickly went to the Sarasota Airport where we were, boarded Air Force One very quickly, and took off like a rocket.
And where did you end up going, and were decisions made that changed those plans because of the other plans the other planes that crashed in Shanksville and at the Pentagon?
Yes. We were, obviously, the flight plan called us to go back to Washington. That's what the president wanted to do. But while we were in the air, that's when we learned, of course, of the airplane striking the Pentagon, and we knew we couldn't go back, although the president insisted he wanted to go back. He wouldn't listen to me, wouldn't listen to Andy Card, he wouldn't listen to the Secret Service, he wasn't listening to anybody in Washington, other than when the vice president personally told him this would not be a good idea and that he should go on to Stratcom. But we needed to get on the ground. The president needed to be seen, he needed to make a statement, so we were kind of close to Barksdale Air Force Base, and I had just retired a friend of mine, at that base only a month or two earlier, and I knew that there was a conference room there that had the capability to have a presidential statement made. So we made the arrangements, plus the security of Barksdale had B-52s and nuclear capability, so we decided this would be the best place to go. The president would make his statement, and then we would decide what we were going to do at that point, with the high probability of going out to Offutt Air Force Base, which is the headquarters for STRATCOM.
So we all wake up on a morning like this, and you know, you hear the news coverage, and you think back to that day. We all remember where we were. What kind of emotions does Mark Rosenkranz go through on a day like this, seeing and hearing and reporting for this on CBS News at the top of the hour? How does that feel 13 years later?
It is extraordinary. It was an amazing day, obviously, a frustrating, angry day, a horrible day for the United States, and so much loss. You know, of course, this was the largest attack on the United States since Pearl Harbor, and to have this done by some group of terrorists for no understandable reason was just difficult to comprehend.
That is an amazing conversation with Mark Rosenkranz, and we went back to 2014 because Mark does, and this is a good example today, he does events every 9/11, and we couldn't book him live today, but I still thought the audio from 4 years ago, obviously nothing's changed since then, really holds up. And it's his perspective really is amazing. I don't know if Ari Fleischer did this morning. I'm guessing he did, but Ari Fleischer, who was the White House press spokesman at the time, he always basically live tweets exactly what was happening at those moments that day on 9/11/2001. And it's fascinating to kind of go through the process, not unlike what we just heard from Mark Rosenkranz, who eventually ended up being the head of the NTSB and then CBS News transportation analyst. The other thing I remember about 9/11, because I was in Milwaukee at the time at WTMJ, and I was doing an evening show. You know who was in town to take on the Milwaukee Brewers that week? And I was scheduled to go to the game. I went through the game on Monday night. 9/11 was on a Tuesday. St. Louis Cardinals were in Milwaukee, and they canceled that game, of course. 3:47, we'll have an audio cut of the day related to this anniversary as well. Coming up in traffic, Roger Brand's next. I just remembered this, and I'm going to do it. I'll try to do it at 4:10 this afternoon. There is an opportunity. This is actually pretty cool, and I can't say a whole lot about it. My producing team doesn't even know about this yet. But I've been looped into something that is going to be a new reality show. And I think it's kind of it's a unique reality show, and it's going to kick off the auditions here in St. Louis. And I can't tell you the network or the person involved yet, although some people who are educated Mark Reardon Show listeners might take an educated guess at this and know who it is. And that person reached out to me and said, hey, we're going to kick this thing off in St. Louis, and I'm going to give you some details on this because it's different than other reality shows out there. It really focuses on hardworking people, which we represent here in the Midwest. So that's coming up in the next hour. I'll kind of give you the heads up on that. Tomorrow on the show, we got nothing. Very likely at this time to be losing golf balls in the woods somewhere in Alton, Illinois, as I play with my buddy Tim Carley. But we'll have baseball tomorrow afternoon. Hopefully, the Cardinals taking the next two from the Rockies. Chris Raby with all the details and a preview of that. Coming up at 4:15 on KMOX.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Cut of the Day is sponsored this afternoon by the Good Feet Store, supporting St. Louis Arches for 16 years. You know, the obvious focus on 9/11/2001 is on the Twin Towers in Manhattan. But, of course, the Pentagon was hit. And then there was United Airlines Flight 93, which was hijacked and fell down and crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. And what we know about that at this point is there were passengers who said, let's roll. Todd Beamer's story is kind of amazing, and his heroism and the other passengers on Flight 93. This, as audio cut of the day this afternoon, is Lisa Jefferson. Lisa Jefferson took Todd Beamer's call on Flight 83, and this is what she says.
When I took the call over, there was a soft-spoken, calm gentleman on the other end. He told me that there's three people that have taken over the flight. At that point, I asked him his name. He told me Todd Beamer.
just quick correction, flight 93. I think I said 83.
He was from Cranberry, New Jersey.
Did you make a conscious decision not to tell Todd about the World Trade Center? Why?
Yes. Because I wanted him to have hope. I wanted him to think that he still had a chance. I didn't want him to feel like it was just totally hopeless, and he definitely didn't have a choice, and he knew he was going to die. I didn't want him to have that feeling.
When he wanted to pray, was your sense then that he knew that?
Yes, I did. I felt that he knew at that time, because he had said, "Oh, Jesus, help us." And then he said, "Lisa, would you recite the Lord's Prayer with me?"
Hard to even respond to that on a day like this. I think it sort of speaks for itself, and that's why it's the audio cut of the day. Todd Beamer, all those other heroes aboard Flight 93, and the thousands of people killed in a devastating terror attack. Total Information PM is coming up.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.